This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:05. You are with Kelvin and Ayman for our next story. We're discussing the government's move to terminate the critical services incentive payment, or the BIPK, for some civil servants. This is after a circular was released recently, which announced that the government will cut several allowances and incentives. This has received quite a response from within the government and the public. In an online petition, more than 80,000 people have called for the reinstatement of this allowance for healthcare staff.
Yeah, so in the circular, they did announce like 9 other items, right, that they were planning to abolish, and one of them is the critical service incentive payment. It doesn't affect the current civil servants. Mm-hmm. It's the ones who will be appointed from January 1st, 2020 onwards. So those who have been receiving the allowance will continue to get the critical allowance until they leave the service.
The critical services incentive was introduced in 1992 to draw talents into certain fields within the public sector that were considered difficult to fill and were paid lowly at the time. So this includes jobs like medical officers, architects, engineers, and legal officers. So under this incentive, civil servants under the management and professional category get an extra 5% allowance on top of their monthly salaries, whereas those in the medical field get a fixed allowance of 750 ringgit in addition to their monthly salary.
But the Public Service Department recently did a policy review because they wanted to strengthen the civil service allowance distribution system. And this review was chaired by Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad and the Special Cabinet Committee on Public Service Reform. And this is the first time it was done since 2007. And they concluded that, you know, these professions that you mentioned earlier, Kelvin, mm-hmm. they no longer offer low salaries, nor are they hard to fill like they were back in the 90s.
So petitions we've mentioned earlier are already out. They are also active criticisms of this move. The Malaysian Medical Association said that the decision to cut critical allowances will demoralise healthcare professionals who are overworked, understaffed and underpaid.
Yeah, and there were also some cabinet ministers as well who sort of chipped in with their opinions. The Minister of Health, Datuk Sri Zulkifli Ahmad, called for an immediate explanation by the JPA, or the Public Service Department. And the Minister of Youth and Sports, Syed Saddiq Syed Rahman, also said that, you know, the salaries of ministers should be reviewed instead of, you know, cutting down on the allowances of healthcare workers who are already overworked and underpaid.
So I think this is just a nice understanding and also a nice time, I guess, to see how protective we are of our healthcare workers, and also especially in the public sector, right? You know, we want them to be able to get more pay. The response to petitions have been overwhelming, and it's nice to also see ministers standing up to say that, you know, we perhaps need to do something more for them. Though, it is interesting, right? I think one interesting thing that it's worth noting that these are public statements. These are made on their Twitter. These are made on their social media platforms. But where is that internal discussion that perhaps might be happening? Or is that happening in both ways, right? Where ministers are also saying that they are doing something and they are caring about it. And at the same time, they're also sending messages to that mutual WhatsApp group, that group WhatsApp that they all are in to address this problem immediately.
Yeah, it doesn't appear that there has been some kind of consultation even within the government, right? Whether this is a good move and whatnot, because it does sound like the health minister was surprised. I quote his Twitter post, he says, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it doesn't sound like the ministers were in on it, and this is a decision by the Public Service Department. Of course, the arguments against abolishing this critical service allowance is that, you know, it won't help the government in terms of attracting talent into the public service. They say that by, you know, getting rid of this allowance, the newer doctors will be more attracted to join private healthcare service providers instead. And this can be a problem when it comes to, you know, the provision of public healthcare. Mm-hmm. If you go to a government hospital, you know that there's huge crowds, always long queues to go to see the doctor, get your medicine. So any form of worker shortage in these kind of areas will only clog up the system, make it more inefficient. And, you know, it will affect the ability of the, you know, regular citizens to access healthcare, you know, subsidized healthcare, which is critical for people who may not be able to afford it. So if a lot of the talent be attracted to go to the private service, you know, it will make the public provision of healthcare more inefficient.
I also wonder, I think the criticism now is also the fact that, well, you know, the government in its move in and attempts to trying to pay off debt, trying to save more money, trying to turn things a lot more linear, more cost efficient, cost effective. Are they here being penny wise and pound foolish where, you know, with the larger things that they are just perhaps, you know, it might just be, you know, a bad attempt in this particular case to try and save money. And that's why people are just reacting so poorly to this decision, which, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I get the logic behind it. The government is trying to, you know, cut down on you know, the public spending. They've already tried to get rid of the pension for new government workers.
Yep.
And now they want to get rid of this new critical allowance scheme. I think it's a huge shock to the system when you completely get rid of something. Perhaps an approach that would meet people halfway is to maybe reduce the critical allowance instead of getting rid of it completely. That would also give people more time to sort of get used to it or transition to an eventuality where it will be abolished. So a step-by-step kind of a strategy to it.
So after this, we will be speaking to Dato' Dr. Ahmad Farouk Musa, Chairman and Director of the Islamic Renaissance Fund, as well as an academic researcher with the Jeffrey Chia School of Medicine and Health Services. Health Sciences at Monash University, Malaysia, for his thoughts on this move. Stay tuned for that. You are listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Kelvin and Ayman on the Evening Edition, and we've been talking about the recent move to terminate the critical services incentive payment for some civil servants. And this is affecting medical officers the most, especially those who, well, specifically for those who work in the public sector. So we're going to dive into this story a bit deeper with Dr. Ahmad Farouk Musa. He's the chairman and director at the Islamic Renaissance Front. At the same time, he's also an academic researcher with the Jeffrey Chia School of Medicine and Health Sciences at Monash University, Malaysia. Farouk, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you. I just arrived in Penang, my hometown of Penang. Just a bit exhausted, but I'll try my best. Yeah.
Thank you so much for the time, as always.
Yeah, no worries.
So, what were your first thoughts about this move to terminate this allowance?
Well, to be honest, I was shocked. And the first thing I did was to contact the health minister because he's my close friend and associate as well. And I told him that, you know, like, you know, they have to rethink about it. And I don't think it's a wise move. Now, at the moment when the political, sentiment in Malaysia is that, you know, they were saying about this government is making all the wrong moves and, you know, it's going to be a one-term government, kind of, you know, talks like that. And I think, like, you know, this is going to kind of pour fuel into fire. Yeah? So I think, like, it's going to make things worse for the government itself. Yeah.
When you say that when you say it's a poor choice, could you elaborate, like, what you mean?
No, I mean, like, you know, like, now people, I mean, if you look at general sentiment across the board, you'll see that people are unhappy with many, many things, you know, like even though they had abolished GST, for example, the 6% GST, right, people did not see any reduction in the prices of goods, for example. And many of them are still paying the 6%. If you go to a restaurant, you're still paying the same amount of bill, you know. It's going to be 6% extra to whatever that you're having. And a lot of other things as well. So, you know, and then the toll reduction or whatever, that, you know, it did not take effect really well. And, you know, a lot of other things like the rising prices in the, in everything, almost everything, you know, not with food, but also about houses, cars, everything. thing is not good, and basically because even like doctors, they have to do, you know, locum, for example, to get some extra money out of it, like 30 ringgit power in KL, and it's not much, but they have to do this just to, you know, have a side income apart from what they're doing, and to deduct the $75 of this fiscal funds, even though it's not a big deal, but, you know, it somehow hurts, you know, like cutting 75 ringgit from what you're supposed to earn, and it's not that much. So that's what I think. So it makes people more unhappy about the government.
So the special cabinet committee review, which led to this move, had found that, you know, these targeted professions, medical officers, architects, and whatnot, they no longer have low salaries and they are no longer hard to fill. Do you agree with this?
It's difficult to say. You know, like probably they're getting more than what I used to get when I first became a doctor, right? It was less than 2,000 ringgit per month at that time. But as compared to now, and probably they're getting higher or double to that amount. But I think that the cost of living is much higher. At this period of time. And I think that they're paying more for a lot of other things as well. And I do not think that the increase commensurate with the rate of inflation. And that's the thing that we have to think about. Yeah, because I understand that, you know, many people, not only the government, but the people, then they see that, you know, doctors should be altruistic, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, altruism, and there must be like a certain degree of altruism, you know, like you can't do it, you know, sacrifice yourself for, you know, for the sake of others and without thinking about your own self. But in the end, you have to think at least a little bit about what you have to do. And you have to remember that, you know, like being a doctor now, a junior doctor, is the only, I think, service in government that is on contractual basis that, you know, like, there's no more, what do you call it? There is a contract post, right? It's not a permanent post anymore. And it's very difficult for them to pursue their studies, for example. Yeah.
How do you see the function of the 750 allowance today? 750 allowance today. Does it still serve to attract or retain talent to those positions?
Well, I don't think that, you know, it's the amount that matters. You know, it's the fact that, you know, you're going to take that away. You know, like. When I first became a doctor, I didn't get a critical allowance. There was no such thing as a critical allowance during that time. You know, even during my time, you know, there was no this on-call allowance and so on and so forth. But, you know, at that time, yeah, we sacrificed, right? But now I think, like, we're living in a new world. Like, you know, people are more demanding. And I think that, you know, like, we have seen cases where doctors are overworked and they were involved in car accidents and they died and, you know, a lot of other things as well. So I think, like, you know, to make them unhappy with such a trivial thing, probably it's not that much, you know, the 7,000 ringgit, but, you know, like, I just think, why can't you just leave it that 7,000 ringgit and you can deduct from, you know, some other ways on politicians, for example. They're getting thousands of allowances, you know, for nothing. What do they do? How many minutes do they debate in the parliament, for example?
So the petition by MMA argued that healthcare graduates today face bleak prospects and little chance for permanent positions. You are a professor and you see young grads. Is this what you've observed as well? And what are the challenges faced by healthcare grads today in Malaysia?
No, I think now it's more challenging for them to pursue their studies to be a specialist, because now, of course, there are many avenues apart from joining the master program in local universities. They can do what they call international exams, MRCP, and so on and so forth, or MRCS. And they also now there are parallel programs where, you know, you can, like during my time, I had to become a general surgeon first before I could pursue to become a cardiac thoracic surgeon, which is considered a subspecialist, you know, a subspecialty program. But nowadays, you can straight away do a sub-surgery program as a cardiothoracic surgeon or as a neurosurgeon. You know, in cardiothoracic surgery, you have this spare program where you just need to pass your NRCS part one and part two, and then you can get enrolled into the program. Yeah, you can do that, but I think that, you know, like it requires, these people to have a permanent post to, I mean, if they want to pursue the master's, to be in the master program, but if they want to do this MRCP, MRCS program, yes, they do need to have a permanent post. But I think that, you know, it's somehow they have a daunting prospect in life. Yeah.
So when it comes to the choice of working for the public versus the private sector, what are the considerations that healthcare workers go through? And what is the main pull factor?
For doctors, you mean?
Yeah.
No, I think, I don't know, because normally, like, we conduct interviews for students who wanted to join a medical fraternity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the things that we wanted to see was that whether they're really interested, you know, is their choice is because their interest in trying to help others, right, in their interest to basically to disseminate their knowledge and to be an instrument of God to heal others, and not on monetary gain, right? You don't become rich because by becoming a doctor, that is for certain. So I think it's more of satisfaction in life and more of for the greater good of humanity.
I'm wondering, is brain drain a problem here when it comes to our doctors, right? Do our graduates prefer to work in other countries, to work in hospitals there?
Wow, this is basically, an interesting topic to be discussed. Because, you know, if you're talking about the prospect of working overseas, you have to look at the requirement to work overseas, say, for example, in Australia or in the US or the UK, for example. In the US, of course, is you have to do a postgraduate and stuff. Mm-hmm. But in Australia and the UK, for example, that you have to have a degree, an equivalent degree that is recognized by other countries. So if you're a Monash graduate, it's easier because the certificate is issued by Monash University Australia. But, you know, for a local graduate to stay, for example, to work in Australia or in the UK, then they need certain degrees and equivalent to those countries. But the thing is that, you know, like, if people with foreign degrees and they have the opportunity to work overseas, I think they'll go for that, you know, rather than staying in Malaysia, because definitely the pay is much higher, the quality of living is better, and, you know, we have more time for ourselves, and we have more time for your hobby and things like that. And I think definitely that, you know, you could basically prosper better if you live abroad than in this country, because, you know, I mean, I work here in Malaysia and I work in Australia before, and I know that the differences in my living situation in this country and abroad.
So what's the balancing line here then? You know, how do you think the government can continue to attract talent while at the same time cut down on their spending?
Well, I think the most important thing is that, to me, we have to ask or to make it attractive for people, you know, to stay in the government or to work in this country. Mm. Attractive not only in terms of salary, but in terms of perks, in terms of benefits, in terms of, you know, insurance coverage and, you know, other things as well. And I think that's the working environment as well. It's very important. And for those who are interested in research, the possibility of, you know, doing research. And, you know, like, if we have all these avenues given to these possibilities given to doctors, and I think that, you know, they might stay here in this country rather than going abroad.
Farouk, it was an absolute pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Thank you. Bye.
That was Dr. Ahmad Farouk Musa, Chairman and Director at the Islamic Renaissance Front and Academic Researcher with the Jeffrey Chia School of Medicine and Health Sciences at Monash University, Malaysia. He was, of course, talking to us about the government's, or rather, the decision to terminate the critical services incentive payment for some civil servants, especially for those who are medical officers. You can, of course, join the conversation. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.